This is RBN, the Republic Broadcasting Network.
Let's do it. Hey, gang. Welcome to another exciting episode of National Bugle Radio. You know it's Monday. You heard Mark Collett's voice just now because I clicked the record button a little bit early. And so we're going to do it. But before we do it, we're going to show for RBN and Co-Certified because that's what I like to do. I like to show for RBN because it is the one guaranteed free speech place on the internet. We're not getting kicked off of RBN because we say what do we say? I mean, I don't even know what we say that gets us kicked off of YouTube, really, but something. And then, I know what it is, but it's not bad. And then also co-certified because we want to live a kosher, a non-kosher certified lifestyle, don't we, Mark?
We certainly don't. I think it's our relentless speaking of the truth that gets us kicked off things. I think that not only is that a speaking of the truth, but it's the fact that every time we do engage with people who disagree with us, we tend to show them up. I think those two things combined really upset the YouTube censors.
Well, you upset some people last, was it Tuesday? It was the day after the show. We were talking about it last week when you were on. I think we did some prep for it, basically. We did a little bit of a trial run on it, discussed some of the topics that might come up, and they did come up, didn't they? That was, if anybody hasn't seen it yet, oh, by the way, Mark, I did play some pretty prolonged excerpts from it on my, was it my Friday show or my Thursday show? I recast a lot of it with my running commentary going alongside of it. But that was something. You were taking on these four Israel advocates. One of them ran away with his pants on fire halfway through. You know, liar, liar, pants on fire.
I certainly do. He did. He ran away. He ran away screaming, screaming abuse at me. In fact, it was quite a sight to behold. To be fair, I think I've been in a lot of internet debates, but I've never had somebody behave like that before. That was shocking, even for me.
I'm trying to remember the first Nazi accusation. Was it even before you made your opening comment, or was it after? I can't quite remember.
I think it was instant. I think that was the opening gambit. Was the Nazi comment.
And the closing gambit was, if we let people like him in charge, they're going to Holocaust us. It's going to be 6 million Jews. And of course, everything you were saying was very, very reasonable. No, we're not rounding up anybody. No, there's no forced, what do you call it, deportations. No, we're just, we're going to offer people an alternative, and they'll be free to take it. Oh my God, you're going to round us up and put us in cattle cars.
There was quite a bit of that as well. There was quite a bit of them insulting me and then claiming that, in fact, I was the one insulting them as well.
And quite a bit of, what, there's no Jewish domination of the media, there's no Jewish domination of banking, followed up by, well, of course we're overrepresented in these fields, we're so much smarter than you, and you're just jealous.
Yeah, there was a lot of double standards and nonsense going on there, and it was quite interesting. At the end, he told me that I was extremely unpopular. Was one of his arguments. I was extremely unpopular. No one listens to me, and no one likes me. Only then to say that I was extremely dangerous because too many people listen to me. It was quite a strange position to take. One would even say it might be contradictory.
And they didn't score a lot of points with their Israeli friends, did they? A lot of the Israeli media came out and slammed them for having given you the opportunity to take their lunch money and cram them into a locker.
Indeed, I think it was, I can't remember the actual paper, I can Google it quickly, but they claimed that their debate backfired on them, that the idea backfired on them, which was quite funny. It was very interesting seeing the Israel advocacy movement getting slammed by the by Jewish publications for doing it, and them actually claiming that it was a huge loss for the organization.
Because they gave you a platform, and giving you a platform is the worst thing possible because they have no answers. I mean, aren't they just coming out and admitting they have no answers?
Well, not only don't they have answers, they have personal attacks. And the interesting thing about this is when you watch the when you look at the replay's had over 20,000 views on just one single YouTube
and that,
account.
The replay, that's not on their channel, right? Didn't they immediately take
down? No, they pulled it down. They pulled it down and put up a lie-filled video saying I attacked them. Now, the interesting thing was I couldn't have been more polite.
No.
When the debate began, my first comments were, I oppose any form of violence and that I believe the only way forward is rational, logical debate with different groups. And I said that at the end as well. I thanked everyone for allowing me to be there. I was extremely polite. And at the end, I even messaged people who were in the debate and thanked them for partaking in it. Because I certainly don't believe in any form of rudeness or being affrontish with these people. But I just found it absolutely incredible that they were so rude to me when they're in such overwhelming numbers. And every time I proved another point, they quickly pivoted to something else because they just couldn't answer anything I had to say. And one of them seemed absolutely taken back by the fact I pointed out about Jewish involvement in pornography, and he simply refused to accept it when all the facts were there. And every time I tried to mention the essay by Dr. Nathan Abrams, mm-hmm. where he concludes that the porn industry was exclusively Jewish in its outset, from its inception, he just wouldn't listen, and that was the point of storming off.
Mm-hmm. And of course, Nathan Abrams, who is a professor in Wales, I believe, at the University of Bangor. And by the way, did you ever see, I know sometimes I bring up these British sitcoms, Are You Being Served, where Mr. Thames, he's about to leave because he's about to retire from the store. It's always been his dream to take his wife back to her homeland, her hometown in Wales, one last time to Bangor.
That is very good, Patrick.
Okay. Well,
that's a true dad joke at its best.
Anyway, no, he's from the University of Bangor in Wales, and not only does he say that Jews were dominated almost exclusively the porn industry from its inception, but he quotes so many of them. The Screw magazine, what's the guy's name, Goldstein, from Screw magazine, saying that the reason he's into porn, the reason he got into porn is because he thinks Christ sucks and he thinks Christianity sucks. So it's not just that they were in it for making a buck and didn't care about...
I can give the exact quote if you want.
Please do.
The only reason that Jews are in pornography is that we think that Christ sucks, Catholicism sucks, we don't believe in authoritarianism. Pornography thus becomes a way of defiling Christian culture and, as it penetrates to the very heart of the American mainstream and is in no doubt consumed by those very same wasps, its subversive character becomes more charged. They are the words of Al Goldstein, publisher of Screw magazine.
So there you go, right from the horse's mouth. And horses, by the way, are not kosher certified. They're not kosher. They don't chew a cud. By the way, you know, giraffes are kosher. If you see some Orthodox Jews hanging around the zoo, you know, just watch out for the giraffe cage. But that's neither here nor there. So, you know, we've got this problem, because what you can see with the gentlemen that you were debating, the Israel advocates, is like these people in particular. I mean, they're I would think they're true believers. I don't think they're necessarily cynical like a like Al Goldstein might be. I think they're true believers. They probably take the religion very seriously. I think they take the mythology, especially the modern mythology, very seriously, that the Holocaust was all of a sudden irrational white people, just irrational Europeans, turning on them for no other reason than perhaps because of Christ killing 2,000 years ago, but just completely irrational, scapegoating, more likely because of envy of their intellectual prowess, that nothing had to do, you know, the Russian Revolution, the Holodomor, you know, the history of Jewish loan sharking, all these things that you could raise. No, none of that had anything to do with it. And if we're not careful, at any moment, they're just going to turn against us. And so therefore, we have to completely dominate these societies. If we don't dominate these societies ruthlessly, if necessary, they're just going to turn on us. And of course, it's a self-fulfilling prophecy because they're so ruthless in their determination to dominate our societies and frankly destroy us as a cohesive people, that they engender hostility towards themselves. That's my takeaway. Is that your takeaway?
I think yes. I think I couldn't have put it better myself. I think their behavior towards host nations, not every single one of them, of course, not every one of them, but
as a group,
overwhelmingly they are overrepresented within industries and endeavors which are typically anti-Western or attack the fabric of Western society, and they usually revel in this. They usually enjoy doing things like this, and they celebrate doing this. But sometimes this goes on to backfire because eventually people have enough of this kind of behavior, and that leads to a situation where people then don't want them living in those nations. And I think now you're seeing also this huge hypocrisy where what is good for the goy, what's good in Western nations, is not something that is tolerated in Israel. So you have this double standard. And that's the thing I like to point out most, because I think the double standard is extremely illustrative of the situation at hand.
Indeed. It had been pointed out in the wake of the synagogue shooting in Pittsburgh last year that, and I guess, was it Israel? There's an Israel Shamir and an Israel Shahak. I can't remember which one is which, and I'm not sure if they're both still around or not. But one or the other of them had pointed out that if this shooter had free access to voices that were offering nonviolent solutions to our problems, like yours and mine and Dr. Duke's and others, then he wouldn't have gone in and shot up the synagogue. That when you silence the voices that are offering nonviolent solutions, when you silence those voices, all you have left are violent paths. That was a point he was making. And I think that's another aspect of the this, shall I say, Jewish paranoia that we saw in the Israel advocates. They just feel that, they, you know, not just the Israel advocates, but then their critics in the Israeli media, they feel that they can't give voice to people like us. Because the problem is not that the crimes that the Jews are pointing out. That's not the problem is not the crimes that the Jews commit. That's not the problem. The problem is anybody pointing it out. Because then that's going to make people angry at Jews. So rather than stopping with their crimes, rather than altering their behavior, they simply want to stifle anybody that would point it out.
I completely agree, and I pointed that out in my opening statement, actually, that there was not only all of these problems, but one of the great issues is that anyone who points out these problems is viciously attacked, they're censored, they can even be jailed in certain Western nations for pointing out these problems, and that leads to a great issue of people feeling as if they can't speak, people feeling as if it's something they can't talk about. And when people feel like they can't talk about the problem, unfortunately, that is when people seek very dark means of going about dealing with their problems. And that's exactly what we don't want to see. That's something that we don't want people to pursue. We don't want people taking violent means or taking a violent path. And I think one of the big issues with the suppression of speech is it does lead to people not being able to talk about problems. They bottle up their anger and then they do things which aren't conducive to the good of any community. And I think that is what happens in places, or what happened in places like New Zealand. You have this mosque shooter and everyone makes this huge deal of this. Yet this guy has been fed all of this anti-white hatred. He's had white guilt pushed upon him. He's been told he must hate himself. He's seen all of these girls attacked. He's seen politicians make excuses for it. I mean, I remember when we saw one of the Muslim terrorist attacks here in the UK, the first thing the government did was to convene a special counsel to calm Muslim leaders' fears that there might be some kind of backlash. So there you have British people being the targets of a Muslim terrorist attack, but the first thing the government do is to worry about what may happen if there's any backlash. And I think eventually all of those things will push certain individuals into committing violent acts. And we obviously oppose those violent acts, but the fact of the matter is, it's not us pushing that. We're pushing a peaceful solution to this. It's actually the politicians and those restricting free speech and pushing people to doing something crazy who are actually to blame for violence.
And I recall you mentioned the New Zealand shooting. Getting back to the Pittsburgh shooting, I recall in the press a man on the street interview. And the man was, he was from that community, and he was saying, I don't see, you know, how could anybody hate Jews? Look at all the good things we do. I mean, we've brought all of these refugees here. And to him, and this is just a man on the street, he's not in a leadership position, and I think he thinks it's tikkun olam. We're fixing the world. We're helping these poor refugees. We're doing it out of the goodness of our heart. How could anybody be mad? Now, of course, at the top of the Jewish power structure, it's not out of the goodness of their heart. It's an explicit strategy to bring in as many non-traditional majority people, if you're talking about the United States, to bring in as many non-white people as possible in order to dilute any cohesive white political force that would be really the only possible challenge to Jewish hegemony over the United States. So they don't, at the upper echelons, the people who are actually leading these policies, they don't see it as being, an act of charity. They see it as like basically an act of ethnic struggle. But down at the man on the street level, I mean, he doesn't get the connection. He's saying there's like, and that synagogue in particular was very involved in the Hebrew Immigrant Aid Society. That is why the person who did the shooting picked it out, and this was a complaint he was making. And they're just not connecting these two very obvious dots at least at the lower level. And I think, it's just another facet of what we saw last Tuesday, that these people, they I don't know, I mean, they are kind of brainwashed, but they want to believe that the Jews do nothing wrong, and anything that happens to them, any hostility towards them is irrational, either out of jealousy or out of, 2,000-year-old New Testament accusations. That's how it seems to me. By the way, we are coming up on the break, so let's hear this on the other side of the break.
Are you in foreclosure, expecting to be served with a foreclosure lawsuit, or suspect your lender has coerced you into an illegal mortgage transaction? A huge number of mortgages made in the last 10 years have legal issues and are possibly defective. State laws and the U.S. Supreme Court have upheld that defective mortgage documents are grounds for foreclosure defense and for counterclaims in favor of the homeowner. If your mortgage has been sold or assigned since closing the loan, it may be defective and you may be paying the wrong party, and the lender may not have standing or the right to foreclose or collect payments under the law. If you would like to know if your mortgage is legal or not, or know if you are paying the right party, we can help. Our initial consultations are free of charge. We are not attorneys. We are legal researchers and work closely with experienced lawyers who know how to help you find the evidence to help you keep your home. Call toll free 1-855-2-KEEP-IT. That's 1-855-2-KEEP-IT today.
Don't regret growing old. It's a privilege denied to many. Heart disease is taking our youth from us. Young people in their 30s, 40s, 50s, and beyond are dying needlessly. One of the hardest messages I've ever had to deliver is to convince people that something natural like Extendivite should be taken as a preventative measure. I'm sure you heard, an ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure. Extendivite is that ounce. Take Extendivite for 1 year and see what your doctor has to say and how much better you feel. Herbs take time to address the problem. It took years of life to have a problem. Give Extendivite 1 year to fix the problem. Don't wait until it's too late. Call 1-877-928-8822 or visit heartdrop.com or visit us on Amazon.
Extend your life with Extendivite.
Corporate media dominates the American opinion. Finding independent voices that counter this avalanche is becoming increasingly difficult. With the endless corruption running rampant throughout our government, independent voices are needed more than ever to battle the offensive against our freedoms and liberties. As a listener of RBN, no one understands this concept better than you. Now it's up to you to do your part. The time has come for you to take action and begin broadcasting the truth to hundreds or thousands of people every month. Sound impossible? Quite the contrary. With pointed slogans from LibertyStickers.com, you can reach countless sleeping Americans unaware that they live in a real-life wonderland. LibertyStickers.com has a huge inventory of political bumper stickers and messages that reflect the truth about our government, our politicians, and the future of America. With so many in stock, there's one perfect for you. Visit us today at LibertyStickers.com. Again, that's LibertyStickers.com. Do your part. Your voice is important. Let it be heard.
And we are right back. I'm sorry I interrupted you before. You were saying?
No, I was just about to talk a little bit about the Hebrew Immigrant Aid Society. I mean, here I've got a poster that says 1,500 rabbis support welcoming refugees. Read the national rabbinic letter calling on the U.S. to keep its doors open to refugees. Well, this is amazing because I saw a video where a young Jewish girl, she was really full of pride. She said, and her words, I'm not quoting verbatim, but it's pretty much close enough. She said, getting two rabbis to agree on anything is almost impossible. And the crowd laughed. And she said, but we've got 1,200 rabbis to agree on this. Well, actually, they had 1,500. So that must have been midway through the collection of these signatures. But that's somebody of Jewish descent boasting that rabbis don't agree on anything. Getting two rabbis to agree on anything is basically like finding hen's teeth. It's impossible. You know, they'll never agree. But the one thing they all agree on is opening borders to the US, opening the US's southern border so that immigrants flood in from all over the world. And that is really quite telling. And for anyone who is anti-immigration, to anyone who is for border control, that says a huge amount, really, doesn't it? That is stating that these people who claim they can't agree on anything can all agree on one thing and one thing alone. And that one thing is that Western nations need to be flooded by non-white, third world, Arab, Latino immigrants, which is to our detriment. And when you have a president who got elected on the back of border control, on the back of reducing immigration, that is going to say to a lot of people, the people who voted for that president, that these rabbis aren't acting in their interest, that these rabbis are not acting in the best interests of all of those people who voted for President Trump on the grounds of immigration. Yet they do it absolutely shamelessly. And when they are challenged on anything like this, that challenge is always met in the same way, with either condemnation or some sort of abject, forced form of shock, where they're like, oh my gosh, I can't believe anyone would criticize us for this. Well, you've got a president who got in on the back of build the wall, chance of build the wall, and you guys are saying, well, actually, we want to open the borders. Well, that is obviously going to cause some degree of consternation amongst what could be said of definitely a majority of white Americans.
Yeah, so many, and think how many of these, like if you're talking about the United States, how many of these people claim to be the children of Holocaust survivors, right? Which meant that that their families came here post 1945. And if you actually look at, a lot of the people who are in the media, a fair number of these Jews in the media are actually even like maybe post 1980 or post 1990 when the Soviet Union and then post-Soviet Union started easing up and letting Jews emigrate. I guess, there's the Jackson-Vanik Amendment in 1970. So they're a very, very recent origin in many cases here. And even if they're not post-1945, they're usually post-1900 or post-1890. They're of recent, very recent origin. And the moment they came here, they tried to open up the gates. And, of course, they, put the poem on the Statue of Liberty, and they created this mythology of a nation of immigrants. And like Alexander Hamilton, there's a, he's on the $10 bill, there's a popular musical about Alexander Hamilton written by I think a Puerto Rican, somebody, or Mexican, somebody of Hispanic ancestry and very Caucasian looking. But always referring to Hamilton as the immigrant. He's an immigrant. I don't know if somebody who was born in one British colony, he was born in the Caribbean islands, but on a British colony, going to another British colony in the New World would have even been thought of as an immigrant. It's certainly a stretch. But any thoughts on that?
Yeah, I think when America was founded, people knew they had emigrated to America. People knew there had been a huge movement of Europeans from Europe to the Americas.
But I mean, in this case, we're talking about somebody who was born on this side of the ocean, not somebody who even.
What I was going to say was, when Europeans moved to America, they made America an extension of Europe. And generally speaking, immigration into America was welcomed if the immigrants were men and women of European descent, of good standing and good character. It wasn't a free-for-all. It wasn't a case where people from all over the world flooded into America and built a multicultural nation. America was not built like that. People of European descent moved to America, and they created a nation that was very similar to the European nations they left and in terms of culture, heritage, traditions, religion, everything.
Continue that discussion on the other side of the break.
You are tuned in to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit our website by going to republicbroadcasting.org.
Without the right accessories, any guy can be off the mark. Whether you've invested thousands in your arsenal or you own a single trusted firearm, a visit to AROutfitting.com is in order. It's one of the finest online selections of tactical optics and AR parts and add-ons, like EOTech, quick target acquisition with no peripheral loss. Browse the full range of Nikon scopes and binoculars. AROutfitting.com can illuminate your world with Streamlight gun-mounted lights from keychain to large handhelds up to 1,100 lumens. Find some stability with Battenfield tactical bipods. AROutfitting.com has CMMG gun parts, barrels, assemblies, handguards, part kits, and more. Plus Magpul clips and magazines. I know I've got you excited, so take a breath. Head to AROutfitting.com. The site's super easy to navigate and features a ton of technical info, including links to manuals. We also welcome vendor and manufacturer inquiries. Remember, if you don't see it, we can get it at AROutfitting.com.
Tired of being lied to by mass media? It's growing more and more apparent today that news is received less and less through standard media outlets. Even with a growing audience every day, RBN is beginning to direct more efforts into social media. Social media and the use of the internet is fast becoming the primary source of people for news, regardless of demographic. RBN has set out to provide some of the best news on the internet through republicbroadcasting.org and also has begun to use the tools to our advantage by way of social media. Republic Broadcasting is now operating a Facebook page to function as yet another avenue to have our collective voice reach new audiences across not only America, but across the globe as well. The Facebook page features not only news, but also an RBN player to listen to our broadcast. Get involved by visiting facebook.com/republicbroadcasting and liking our page and share it with your friends and family, because you can handle the truth.
Homeowners, if your lender has gone out of business or sold your transaction to another lender or servicer, you may be the victim of a wrongful foreclosure resulting in the loss of your home. If you've already lost your home, are in foreclosure, or even in good standing, you can challenge the mortgage transaction's illegal issue and your property can be restored to you, and your foreclosure can be stopped or reversed and the mortgage transaction declared unenforceable. State laws, U.S. title codes, the Uniform Commercial Codes, and U.S. Supreme Court rulings have upheld that defective mortgage documentations can reverse or stop foreclosures and enforce property title claims in favor of the homeowner. We are having successes in stopping the process of foreclosure, the enforcement of the foreclosure judgments, the sale of property, and evictions after the sale. We are not attorneys, and we don't give legal advice. We are a professional team of legal researchers, providing forensic mortgage audits and expert witnesses. We have the knowledge to produce the evidence and enforce laws regarding your legal issues. We've been in business for 12 years without a complaint. Consultations are free, and we provide a free title search to confirm if your mortgage has legal defects. Please call 855-253-3748. 855, the number 2, keep it today.
And we are back, and we're talking about the nation that Europeans built in North America and in the United States. And it wasn't just any Europeans. It was mostly people from the British Isles, and not even just the British Isles, but we're really talking about Great Britain and Northern Ireland. There were some early on from Holland, because some of the colonies were originally, you know, well, New York was originally Dutch. Actually, the Delaware River Valley was originally Swedish for a very short period of time. And of course, there were Germans who came over relatively early. But primarily, it wasn't even so much an extension of Europe. It was an extension of England, and the colonists in the American Revolution were demanding, before they demanded independence, they were demanding their rights as Englishmen. When you started getting large-scale Irish or large-scale Catholic German immigration in the mid-1800s, that was very disruptive. And it really took a long time for, say, the Irish to integrate. It was tough enough for the Irish to integrate. It took about 100 years. How long is it going to take for Somalis to assimilate into our? What would you bet?
Well, I don't think they're ever going to assimilate, and I think the issue here is essentially an issue of rewriting history. We are talking here about a group of people rewriting history and stating that America, from the outset, was a multicultural, multiracial nation, and it was only built on that foundation, as if North America was built completely on the foundation of multiculturalism. Now, when you say multiculturalism, you just said it was mainly English speakers, and there were some cultural rivalries between different European tribes that settled in America. But it was European tribes that settled America. It wasn't boatloads of Somalians. It wasn't boatloads of Arabs. It wasn't boatloads of people from the Indian subcontinent or from Latin America. In fact, the white settlers in America fought wars with Mexico, with the Mexican Empire. Mm-hmm. They actually fought to keep America European. And there was, obviously, Mexico attempted to invade North America at one point, but all of this seems to be completely written out of history. So it seems as if America, from the very outset, was some kind of multicultural nation that was built for all. But if you actually look at the push west, the drive to claim the Wild West, that was almost completely, that was exclusively done by those of European descent. Now, when I say it was exclusively done, I am sure there will be some snarking revisionist who will manage to point out that there was one black man in the Wild West or somebody who was of half Arab descent. But overwhelmingly, 99.9%, it was white. But now that, again, is being completely rewritten. It's being completely sort of mischaracterized, and all of this is a complete lie. And the same's happening here in Europe. You know, obviously America now, multicultural nation, and you're being told it was always that way. It was built as a nation of immigrants for people of all over the world. Completely false. It was a nation of European immigrants. But the same's happening here in the UK. We're now told or shown that Victorian England was in fact completely multicultural, that Victorian England was as multicultural as London is today, and that history has just been whitewashed, that somehow, despite all of these migrants living in Victorian England, someone came and squirreled them away or hid them or moved them or got rid of them by the time of the First or Second World War. And at that point, you know, they whitewashed history. And they totally misappropriated what was going on to fool the population into thinking that only white people had lived in British cities. And this is just such a completely absurd point to make. Absolutely absurd. But that is what they're doing. It's not just something that's happening in America. It's happening all over Europe. And it goes back even further, because now you're seeing people cast black, Middle Eastern actors and actresses from the Indian subcontinent, all the way back to roles that took place in, you know, the time of Henry VIII, or the time of, you know, the mythical time of King Arthur and the Knights of the Round Table. And all of this is a very subtle and subversive way of making especially young people believe that this is how our island, this is how our continent, this is how North America always was. It was always that way. And I get this as a quite a regular kind of rebuttal to what I'm saying. People say, oh no, don't be ridiculous, you know, these roles are just being filled by ethnic minorities now to broaden the appeal of these shows. Everyone knows it wasn't like that. Stop being so sensitive. But they don't. Young people are not being taught history in schools. Mm-hmm. Young people are having this hidden from them. And when young people see, for the first time, some kind of historical reconstruction or historical drama, where there are black knights riding about on horseback doing battle with their lances and their swords and shields, they believe that, you know, there was black dukes and duchesses in England, that there were black and Middle Eastern nobles, when in fact there weren't. It's just a complete fabrication. And of course, that's just part of a much bigger picture, because now every part of history is being completely multiculturalized, obviously, except for World War II. In World War II, that is now, well, World War II has been multiculturalized on the side of the Allies, but not on the side of the Axis forces. And that now is being portrayed as basically three sides. There are Jewish victims, there are white aggressors, and there are multicultural saviors. And that is how World War II will be played out. World War II will now be played out that multiculturalism rallied to defeat evil whiteness and save the persecuted Jews. That will be the narrative that every child comes to know as the truth if they pass through the official line of state education.
Well, I never thought of it like that, but that's exactly right. You know, now we're being overrun with immigration on both sides of the Atlantic. And on this, you know, on your side of the Atlantic, you can make the argument that, you know, the English people are the indigenous people of that island. And things are a little more complicated on this side of the ocean because the settlement of North America by Europeans is in historic times. You know, we know when it happened. We know more or less how it happened. But I say more or less. There are mythologies about it. You know, there's some, and I think the notion of the whites genociding the innocent Indians, I think you can make a much stronger case for whites being genocided today in our situations than Indians actually being genocided, because the vast majority of deaths of the indigenous Americans in the, you know, 16th, 17th, 18th centuries was from disease, smallpox. And so as the, which were brought by the Europeans, by the way, but as the Europeans were proceeding into the interior of the continent, they were meeting, for the most part, very little resistance because of the disease. Now, it's worthy of note, we never think of this, but smallpox ravaged pretty much every continent on Earth. And in the 1700s, in Europe, the leading cause of death was smallpox. So it's not as if somehow the Europeans had weaponized this and they spread it with blankets, because that's not how the disease spreads. It was endemic all over the world. It was a leading cause of death in Japan for a while, in India. So in, you know, in this way, these diseases were going to come to the New World sooner or later. The people in the New World were particularly defenseless against them. But it's not as if, I mean, you had how many tens of millions, if not hundreds of millions, of Europeans die from smallpox or plague or other diseases that came from outside of Europe. So there, just like the same as the case with slavery, there is a very unfair and one-sided criticism against Europeans for introducing disease, when historically Europeans were just as likely to be the recipients of outside diseases that ravaged their populations. Isn't that right?
No, of course it is. I mean, when you look at the sort of disease, I mean, look at the plague, the Black Plague that swept through Europe. There's been numerous occasions where Europe has been absolutely racked with disease and pestilence. I mean, there have been certain huge disasters that befell London, the Great Fire, and also the Black Death, which were rife in the city because of overcrowding, because of the conditions. And these things affect all people all over the world, and they're generally a result of overcrowding more more than anything else. When you have uncontrolled population growth and people are living in very, very close proximity, those people generally live in very poor or dirty conditions, which leads to the spread of disease. It allows disease to spread rapidly and destroy entire populations. Now, that is something that's affected all people in the world. And the only reason we are staving that off at the moment with overpopulation is the fact we are so medically advanced and we have antibiotics, although antibiotics are now obviously becoming far less useful as a means of stopping disease because we have overused them and we are breeding by dint of evolution, we are breeding bacteria now in hospitals which are completely immune to even the strongest cocktails of antibiotics. So that potentially will lead to a huge catastrophe in the future and a massive demographic change where you could see potentially millions die. But again, history is being written as if the white man swept through every nation, killing as many people as he or she could lay their eyes on. And I think one issue with America, and I've seen this as somebody in the UK, the narrative is always very clear. The white man swept through North America, killing, butchering, and destroying everything in his path, with the eventual aim of conquering every last piece of land and taking it from the Native Americans, when in fact that isn't the case. And the important thing to remember about this is not only that not the case, not only is that demonstrably untrue, but there is also the issue that the Indians, the American Indians, Native Americans, are always portrayed as people who are completely wonderful, completely peaceful, kind, absolutely cultured, the kind of people that could do no wrong, almost like, you know, for want of a better term, the peaceful Pocahontases of the world. You know, they lived in absolute harmony with nature. They lived peacefully alongside other tribes. And really, when you look into that, that's completely false. They were very warlike. Mm-hmm. They constantly warred, different Native American tribes constantly warred with one another. But the way history has been written, you would think it was completely different. You'd have thought that the Europeans arrived on American shores to find these peaceful, peace-loving people singing, dancing, living happily, almost in kind of like the vision of the 1960s hippie compound, you know, peace, love, togetherness, at one with nature. And then the evil European, you know, was welcomed by these kind people. And the kind people, you know, as they welcomed them into their bosom, the European drew his sword and just started massacring them willy-nilly, when that was not the case at all. And in fact, much of the downfall of the Indian nations didn't come from war with Europeans. It came from war between fellow tribes who hated each other and had hundreds of years worth of bad blood. And when the European arrived, they actually, different Indian tribes at different times allied with Europeans to wipe out their enemies. It's a much, much, and I'm not saying any of that is right or correct. I'm just saying it is historically correct and true, and thus must be looked at from a historically accurate narrative.
And, you know, and it's pretty typical, too. Like, throughout history, across the globe, it's very common to have warring tribes. It happened in Europe. It happens in Africa. It happened in Asia. So it's not that unusual. Now, when I was growing up, the United States wasn't as politically correct. And I had a book as a child. It was a book about American Indians for kids. And, groups, I think the Creek Indians in the Southeast were described as being very warlike. The Hopi Indians in the Southwest were more peaceful. And so, you know, there was certainly a variety of different cultures. Later, I learned the Plains Indians, the coming-of-age ceremony, what you could think of as the bar mitzvah for Plains Indians. Maybe it was the Sioux Indians or the Blackfoot Indians, but in the Northern Plains, the buffalo hunters, they were very warlike, and their bar mitzvah, what you took a young adolescent child, a boy, and impaled him, and hung him to the ceiling of a wigwam of and amputated a couple of his fingers, and put him in excruciating pain, and maybe he'd die, but if he survived, he was somebody who was really tough and would be good in war. So I don't know if that's really the ideal that we would want to push. We hold up these people as being ideal, but you look at some of the groups and some of their customs, and you know, the Aztec the Aztecs were so famous for human sacrifice, just tens of thousands of people per year. Yeah, it's a little more complicated. The Europeans don't necessarily seem all that bad in comparison, do they?
No, of course not. And it is very interesting when you talk about issues like that, especially issues of the Aztecs. That's another one of those big lies where you see all these young girls and they sort of flock to go to these Aztec temples, these places of beauty, and they all take selfies at them, and they're like, oh my God, what a beautiful empire. Yeah. Oh, I'm in these wonderful hills. It's so mystical. I'm surrounded by the spirits of an ancient civilization. As if that ancient civilization was doing something wonderful and noble, when in fact they were beheading children for human sacrifice.
Okay, with that, we'll be right back.
Homeowners, are you in foreclosure, expecting to be served with a foreclosure lawsuit, or suspect your lender has coerced you into an illegal mortgage transaction? A huge number of mortgages made in the last 10 years have legal issues and are possibly defective. State laws and the U.S. Supreme Court have upheld that defective mortgage documents are grounds for foreclosure defense and for counterclaims in favor of the homeowner. If your mortgage has been sold or assigned since closing the loan, it may be defective and you may be paying the wrong party, and the lender may not have standing or the right to foreclose or collect payments under the law. If you would like to know if your mortgage is legal or not, or know if you are paying the right party, we can help. Our initial consultations are free of charge. We are not attorneys. We are legal researchers and work closely with experienced lawyers who know how to help you find the evidence to help you keep your home. Call toll free 1-855-2-KEEP-IT. That's 1-855-2-KEEP-IT today.
Corporate media dominates the American opinion. Finding independent voices that counter this avalanche is becoming increasingly difficult. With the endless corruption running rampant throughout our government, independent voices are needed more than ever to battle the offensive against our freedoms and liberties. As a listener of RBN, no one understands this concept better than you. Now it's up to you to do your part. The time has come for you to take action and begin broadcasting the truth to hundreds or thousands of people every month. Sound impossible? Quite the contrary. With pointed slogans from LibertyStickers.com, you can reach countless sleeping Americans unaware that they live in a real-life wonderland. LibertyStickers.com has a huge inventory of political bumper stickers and messages that reflect the truth about our government, our politicians, and the future of America. With so many in stock, there's one perfect for you. Visit us today at LibertyStickers.com. Again, that's LibertyStickers.com. Do your part. Your voice is important. Let it be heard.
Folks, we're living in a world the likes of which we've never perceived any clearer than we do now. The plan for global governance has been in the works for generations and would have likely been achieved by now but for the fact that the globalists left open their Achilles heel. With all their tools, Federal Reserve System, fiat currency, No Child Left Behind, and then Common Core education introduced to our schools to dumb us down, vaccines, pharmaceuticals to lobotomize us, GMO foods, insertion of compromised or bought and paid for politicians, judges, mainstream media propaganda, all pieced together like a puzzle designed to ultimately bring the world under submission. But with all their strategy, they forgot one thing: knowledge. And knowledge is power. With knowledge, their bombardment is nullified. Folks, with that, as brilliant and knowledgeable as you've become, among the wisest audience of any radio audience in the world, and you are, I want you to take a moment to reflect and ask yourself, how much of that knowledge did I obtain from Republic Broadcasting Network? How high has my consciousness been raised since I've been a listener? How fast am I now able to discriminate truth from fake news?
welcome back to the show. So people who listen to the show know that I, from time to time, reference a show called Fascination, which is on another network. I'd recommend contributing money to RBN. But from time to time, there's other interesting things to listen to. And I understand, Mark, that you are going to be on Fascination this coming weekend. And what is the topic that you're going to be talking about?
I am not sure. I'll tell you.
I'll tell you how it was advertised. It was advertised as you're going to be discussing the differences between the American written constitution and the British unwritten constitution and the implications for free speech.
Well, I did not know that. I'll have to make sure I'm fully versed on that then.
Yeah, well, I mean, the written constitution in the United States does specify freedom of speech, and I think that's given us a little bit of extra protection. We are losing our free speech. But in Britain, how does that whole unwritten constitution thing work?
Well, we don't really have a constitution. People talk about, there have been several things like the Magna Carta. People say, the Magna Carta and other documents. But all of these have been superseded. And it's all well and good talking about pieces of paper that exist in museums. But if they are not enshrined in modern law that's actually used in the courts today, they're not worth the parchment they're written on. And we are in a situation in the UK where we don't have free speech, where we have incredibly restrictive race laws, which essentially have now been widened to restrict you making any criticism of people on the grounds of gender, sexual orientation, race, religion, and disability. Those are the five protected facets in British law. And that makes things in this country very difficult when you want to discuss groups of people acting in a certain way. Because under UK law and English law, it's very, very hard to make a generalisation. If you do make a generalisation, you can find yourself in court. So if you are trying to talk about something like the problem of Islamic grooming gangs, that is extremely difficult because you can easily fall foul of laws about religious discrimination or laws that forbid you grouping people in a certain way based on their religious affiliation. But when these people act in a certain way based on their religious affiliation, how do you go about discussing those problems?
How could you have political science or sociology or these fields if you can't talk about people as a group? Anthropology, how can you have it?
Well, you can't. It's very, very difficult, and it's something that it's something that is extremely testing because you're always walking a tightrope. We want to talk about the truth, and we want to spread the truth, but when the government claims that the truth is in fact no defence and that they can investigate you, not just for hate crimes, but what they call hate incidents, mm-hmm. which are non-crime-based incidents that they believe are motivated by hate. For example, if you walk into McDonald's and don't want to sit next to a group of blacks and you decide to go and sit at the other side of the room, somebody can, and the police encourage this, somebody can actually call the police and say, I've just witnessed a hate incident. A white man came into the McDonald's and he took one look at a table full of blacks and decided to walk to the other side of the room and sit and eat his hamburger over there. I think his actions were motivated by hate. That is a hate incident. And the police can log you for carrying out a hate incident.
Well, that's all the time we have, and maybe that's a good thing because that's a black pill right there. One last question: who is your guest on your podcast on Wednesday?
We have. Let me get her name correct because it is not an easy one. Rachel Constantinidis, and she is a programmer who runs a website called Entropy, which is a new way of taking super chats and donations while you're live streaming, so that if you have been demonetized by Google and YouTube, you can still interact with your audience. And also, it is something that routes chat through a separate chat box on their website, and that actually means that you cannot then be taken down by YouTube for what is said in that separate chat.
Well, thank you very much for being on the show, and I'll be back again tomorrow with another exciting episode of Nice Radio. We'll be right back.
listening to the Republic Broadcasting.